Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
I am live on this drizzly night in San Francisco Bay, and it's a night that you reach for comfort food, which I did for lunch. I ate the diet of my father, which was pot roast and potatoes. Normally, I miss the health, but, oh, I got to tell you something. There's something about comfort food. There's something about that comfort food. That northern comfort food is the greatest. Nevertheless, we're going to open with a new opening. I cut a new opening for the new show, which begins January 1st on the Savage Nation. I want you to listen to the, you know, you heard the opening, which is the best in the business. And it's unbelievable. I listened to it today on a stereo, not on my show. Well, we added a few lines. I want you to listen to this. Play it, please.
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Yeah, well, it is the home of borders, language, and culture, which has not come out of the mouths of any Republicans, so far as I know. You wouldn't expect it from international socialists run by George Soros, but you would expect an occasional Republican to say, hey, borders, language, and culture are my mottos. I mean, I know liberals, I've run into them from time to time, who say, you know, Savage, I'm a savage borders, language, and culture guy, but I'm a liberal. They've said that to me. So now I want to play something for you that is shocking. It's Obama gave a speech that was closed, of course, to the public in his fashion of the secret centralized government that he's running to the Wall Street Journal, a big supporter of Obama. As you well know, what you don't understand is what the connection is between socialism and capitalism, and how there's actually a confluence of the two isms at the highest levels. And I want you to listen to this disingenuous statement in clip one.
I would distinguish between the rhetoric and the tactics versus the ideological differences. I mean, in most countries, you've got, you know, people call me a socialist sometimes, but no, you've got to meet real socialists. you'll have a sense of what a socialist is.
Well, my friends, I know what a socialist is. I've written about it. He's a socialist. Let me give you an example of why the president is lying. He's so clever at what he does that the yes man who invited him to speak at the Wall Street Journal giggled like we're all crazy for calling him a socialist. So let's go to none other than the Merriam-Webster Dictionary and look up together, as you might have done in high school, what socialized medicine is, for example. Medical and hospital services administered by an organized group and paid for by funds obtained, usually by assessments, taxation, or philanthropy. Well, I would say that's a loose definition of Obamacare. Now, if you read the classical definition of socialism in Merriam-Webster, it says a theory of social organization based on government ownership, management, or control of the means of production and the distribution and exchange of goods. So in classical 100% socialism, that is true. The government owns the businesses, as is going on in some of the South American banana republics, where they're seizing what was once private enterprise. That is classic gangster socialism of the type practiced today probably only in Cuba and North Korea. Maybe a few other places that I'm not familiar with. That's gangster socialism of the type that has destroyed societies and people for well over 100 years. But if you look at China's socialism, what you find is something different. The government doesn't own, manage, and control production and distribution of goods. They have opened up the markets to free markets in China. What the government does is control the people through a centralized power structure. The people live in a prison camp, basically, in China. So they have more freedom in terms of their commerce than we do. I don't know if you know that. I know people who have gone and worked in China and own businesses there. They have the equivalent of a Wild West. They have what's called a free market economy in China. We don't. And then you could also argue, for example, that Obama's socialist government does, in fact, if it doesn't own the businesses that you run, it certainly manages and controls your means of production and your means of distribution and exchange of goods through the onerous regulations that the Lilliputians called bureaucrats impose upon us. But I don't want to get stuck on that. No, Obama's not really a socialist in that regard. He's worse than a European socialist today. Why? Because he runs a secretive, centralized government. European socialists today could never get away with his crimes against the American people. You see, in Europe, they are not hamstrung with white guilt. You see, in Europe, they're not hamstrung with a two-party system where there's no democracy whatsoever. You see, in Europe, many of the countries have parliamentary systems of government, which give the people numerous political parties to choose from, and, most importantly, an opportunity to dismiss a rogue, corrupt, incompetent regime. I will say no more. You don't have to comment on any of this. Play a little jazz, because today's going to be a jazzy kind of show. Certainly, I'm going to give you all the news, views, and reviews. A little more music. We're going to warm up. I'm going to do something never done in the history of talk radio today, which I'm not going to tell you about until I'm ready to do it, and I'm not ready to do it. It'll be my signature show. A lot of news out there. I don't know if I want to go there. Here's what I want to ask you before I go into the news of the day. Here's what I want to ask you. It's been bugging me. I go to sleep every night and I wake up every night with the same question. I want to make you my producer for a day. I'm sure a light bulb just went off in your head. Many of you across America have loved my show for years. You say, oh, that's great. What does he mean by that? I want you to be a Savage Nation producer for a day. As you know, my show opens January 1st in a new time slot. And everyone in the media will be listening to that show. Every audience member of any talk radio show is going to absolutely tune into that show. And I'm saying, well, do I have to change my show? Because I can't change my show. No matter if I wanted to, I wouldn't know how to do that because it's not me. The show is me. Talk radio is about the host. And after 20 years, it's always about the host. So you're going to get more of what you have, but a little different in some ways. So I want to ask you something. You're a Savage Nation producer for a day. What would you do if you were my producer for January 2nd and January 3rd, and then the following week, those first six shows where the world will be listening and say, who is this guy? Should the show be more political, more newsy, more lifestyle, or stay the same? How would you define and introduce the Savage Nation to the new audience? Someone said to me, Michael, your show put three zeros around the audience numbers. Put three zeros behind the audience numbers that you currently have. So I would ask you, what would you like to see me do the first week in the new time slot in the Savage Nation? And I will give out books today. I know many of you love my books. You'll get free books for the best ideas. Not every idea is going to be the best ideas, but some of them will be the best ideas. And while you're calling 855-400-7282 on this beginning of Thanksgiving holiday, it really is, it's already, I don't know, the whole country's already gone into the holiday mood. They're in, they're shopping in the box store. Are they shopping yet? I hear the box stores are empty. No one's shopping yet. Here are some of the headlines. And this is from Paul Bedard of the Washington Examiner. Obama lifts Newt Gingrich's theme in the Wall Street Journal interview. He stole the phrase poised for a breakout line from Newt Gingrich. I'm not a fan of Newt Gingrich nor Obama, so don't call me on that. Michelle Obama forced to raise money saying, I hate doing this. Oh, really? It must be such a burden. Sort of cuts into your vacation time. John Strange McCain predicts Obamacare collapse, calls for GOP alternative. Oh, so he suddenly got the message that he's hated across America on both sides of the aisle. He thought by catering to the left-wing socialists, they'd love him and embrace him. Then he found that he had nobody because he stabbed his core in the back. No, John, you can't go home again, John. Next article head is the end question mark. Obamacare slams president like Katrina hit George Bush. Well, I don't think he's through, by the way, at all. Report says 60% of child sex victims from foster homes. Let's see. Let's see. We're going down the list. This was on 11/18. Oh, today is 11/19. Secretary of Hate John Kerry calls climate change the world's biggest threat. Can you believe this lunatic? Does this guy have ketchup on his collar or what? Is this guy insane? The man is traveling around the world trying to stick a knife in Israel's heart, doing a deal with Iran, cutting off sanctions, making sure they build a bomb so they can kill the Jews. And now, on top of that, he comes up with the biggest lie of all time. Secretary of Hay John Ketchup Kerry told the climate change conference in Poland Monday that global warming is the biggest challenge to the world. Fulfilling our responsibility to the future happens. Oh, come on, John. No one believes a word you say. You've always been a fraud. New York Times. Politics makes D.C. the gayest place in America. I'm not interested in that topic. I don't care what people do sexually. How's that? It doesn't interest me. I'm about as interested in your alimentary canal as I am in your, you know what. I just don't care what you do. How's that? Does that interest you? I don't care if you're gay or straight. It doesn't interest me. It's boring. It's that simple. What else is in the news? You know why I say that? I get angry because there's a movie that came out that I'm going to review tonight that I didn't see. I heard about it from two women I trust who like movies and went to the movies. They saw a movie called The Door. You'll throw up when you hear what it's about. You take Robin Penwright. Her name used to be Penn. She used to be married to that slimeball, Sean Penn, who talks the talk about liberalism and no guns and no violence. And every movie he's in, he's either kicking someone in the face, shooting them with a gun, or cutting their throat. In his last movie, Gangster Squad, it opens with him playing some Jewish gangster, Mickey Cohen, from the 50s, tearing a man apart with chains and two cars. The worst movie I've ever seen. So now he divorces at a runoff with some younger broad, apparently. And now she looks like you've never seen anything like this woman. She was once pretty. Her and Naomi Watts are in this movie called The Door. You know what it's about? It is about middle-aged women who sleep with their sons. Not their own sons, but the, in other words, woman A, Cougar A, and Cougar B. Cougar A sleeps with Cougar B's son, and Cougar B sleeps with Cougar A's son. This is how far Hollywood has fallen. It's about white trash behavior of the lowest kind. Adore. I'll talk more about it. It's the kind of trash that makes the world hate America. But what would you expect from Sean Penn's next wife? 855-400-7282. We're off on a roll. Let's go to Anthony on WABC, who's answering my question on what he would do as my producer. Anthony, go ahead, please.
Yes, I think you should stay strictly with politics for drive time in New York.
You mean I shouldn't do any more movie reviews, no cooking, no food, nothing?
Not the meatballs and the curry. Maybe a movie now and then, but people are interested in politics.
Yeah, I don't know. No, I'll leave that to Wallbanger. That's all he knows how to do. He can have Rand Paul on. He could have Ted Cruz on. Do you find that intriguing to listen to Rand Paul and Ted Cruz? Hey, Anthony.
Excuse me? Yeah.
Anthony. You find it a good radio to listen to Ted Cruz and Rand Paul on a Wallbanger show?
No, I don't listen to his show. You're going to be following Rush. So you need to be on politics, but with your perspective, because
I understand that. You're certainly going to not hear. I'm not leaving politics. It's my mainstay. It's what I do. But if you've listened to Rush for 3 hours, you're then going to want to hear the same thing again?
I don't think you are the same thing again, or I wouldn't be listening to you. I don't.
All right. Hold on. So now you're almost coming around to my point of view. Of course you're going to get my take on politics, but it's anyway, only politics. I've got to do all the other stuff I do, Anthony, or else I'll get bored.
Maybe a movie now and then, but the food stuff, I turn you off when you go to food.
Okay. Well, you better turn me off because I'm going to go back to meatballs in a minute. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
This is the only country in the world where we don't have health care. Mm. Countries embarrass us around the world, and this is the only country in the world where we don't have a gun law. Mm. I watched you talk about that. Mm. Quite frankly, it's embarrassing. Obama's not embarrassing. The country's embarrassing.
That is the man who, in my opinion, runs the sewer pipe of Hollywood, Harvey Weinstein. Another fraudulent liberal who talks the talk but doesn't walk the walk. Every movie he makes, with almost that, without exception, violence, filth, demented. Suddenly he's worried about health care. He doesn't get enough health care, and he wants gun control. I think there should be Harvey Weinstein control. In a sane society, there'd be Weinstein control, not gun control. In fact, you should put up a bumper sticker, Hollywood control, not gun control. Control the filth coming out of Hollywood. I don't want to get angry. Still, my neck hurts me. I get angry, my neck starts to hurt. It's like a bellwether. It's a bellwether. So if you were the producer of The Savage Nation, January 2nd, remember, here's the thing. January 1, the show shifts to drive time. So if you're listening in New York, it goes on 3 to 6. If you're listening in San Francisco, West Coast, it's 12 to 3, right? So a lot of people, oh, wow, that's great. That's hot. And great. Now, what are you going to do? You're changing anything? How can I change anything after 19 years? 20 years, March 21st. If I'm still living, I have to do a big event. If God's, you know, still here, because you don't know what tomorrow brings. So I always say, God willing, because I'm still very God fearing, despite despite the fact that I sound, you know, cynical and sarcastic, which is true. At the end of the day, I'm always like looking up at God, saying, "Okay, sorry, make a mistake." Like, "Okay, sorry, went over, didn't mean that. I'll try again tomorrow." But the thing is, God willing, I'm still here, March 21st, 2014. I have to do a big blowout event. I don't know where, how, but that's not what I'm asking you about. January 1st, I open the show. New show. I've worked for it all my life. It's the pinnacle of my career. It's that simple. That is like Tyson doing the one-man show on Broadway. He was heavyweight champion of the world, but he's actually better now as a monologuist than he was as good as a monologuist as he was as a boxer. I think he's incredible. You could see how intelligent this guy is. And as you well know, no matter how tough a boxer is, there's a tremendous amount of mental in every fight. Klitschko told me that, the big, big Ukrainian champion. When I met him at a fight in Las Vegas, someone I know was sponsoring the mat, the ring mat. And I was in the third row, and over to the right was one of my heroes, Klitschko. So I went up to him, and I said, how you doing? He knew my show. And I said, how much of what you do is mental? And he said, 95% of it. I said, wow. I said, well, today is my son's birthday. So he said, in our tradition in Russia, he said, it means it's your birthday. We had a very nice moment. I don't mean he's my buddy. So anyway, Tyson's a very smart man. And what I'm saying is, well, I'll get back to it.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
If talk radio came with a warning label, listen before it does. On the only conservative station in the Bay Area, Hot Talk 560, KSFO.
I would distinguish between the rhetoric and the tactics versus the ideological differences. I mean, in most countries, you've got, you know, people call me a socialist sometimes, but no, you got to meet real socialists. you'll have a sense of what a socialist is.
Yeah, well, okay. Why would you giggle at a thing like that? It's always been true that dictatorships emerge this way, and they let the big businesses have what they want. They let the power brokers have what they want, and they strangle the people. They stifle the middle class. That's how socialism grows. That's how the cancer grows. I mean, you define socialism any way you want. It's centralized, secretive government. In this case, it's centralized, secretive, corrupt, and incompetent government. So, and as I said before, he's worse than a Euro-socialist. They could never get away with what Obama's getting away with. In Europe, they're not hamstrung with white guilt. And the parliamentary systems that occur in most European countries give the people an opportunity to dismiss a rogue, corrupt, or incompetent regime. We don't have such a leisure here. We got to wait, you know? So that's, I'm giving you a little politics. And I haven't gotten to what I'm going to do. I have a special feature for you tonight. I decided tonight, in the middle of nothing, 11, 19, 2013, I'm doing something I had never been done in radio. I haven't gotten to it because I'm not ready. You're not ready. I'm warming you up. It's the Savage Nation. And the lines are so hot, it's amazing. But radio is the most amazing medium on earth. Unless you're in radio and as connected to it as I am, you can't understand what I'm saying to you. Maybe as an audience member you can. There is nothing more electrifying than talk radio. Nothing. I heard this when I first started. Somebody told me 20 years ago, that radio is considered the bastard child of the entertainment medium, and it's still known as that. But that's how it's looked upon by the power brokers or the people who make the money off it. It's sneered at. But from the performer's point of view, Talk radio is the most electrifying of all media mediums. You ask anybody. You ask anybody, anyone who does this. First of all, it's unscripted. So you're walking without a on a tightrope. I have no script in front of me. Yeah, I have sound bites and stories, but I don't know where exactly the form I'm going to go in or how I'm going to play it out, because I don't know what you want. I have to feel it. I have to feel my way through it. Someone said to me, well, it's like you're stepping into a ring and you don't know if you're going to win the fight. I said, no, I know I'm going to win the fight, but I don't know what strategy I'm going to use until I see my opponent. In this case, the opponent is the ether itself. It's a fantastic thing I'm saying to you. You are the ether. My audience is this etherous mass of listeners. I'm in a room alone somewhere. I don't know who you are, but I can sense you. I can sense you as though I have a sixth sense about my audience. If you don't have it, you can't do this business. So I'm asking you as my audience, I mean, on a Tuesday night like this, you are listening because you love the show and you want to hear a little bit of the news, but not all news, blah, blah, blah. And I'm saying to you, come January 2nd, 3rd, what would you do if you were my producer differently than what I am doing? If anything, I'm not sure I'm going to do anything differently, nor do I think I could do anything differently because I'm not a script guy. So, Joan, you're my producer for a night on WABC. Go ahead. Be my producer. What would you recommend?
You have to look at it this way. You're coming back home to your roots, back to New York. When you talk about things that happened to you in your childhood, it's funny and it's comforting, and there's millions of baby boomers that can relate to the experiences that you talk about. And it's so entertaining. I loved hearing about your mother cooking. You made me laugh. Sometimes you make me want to cry. I'm so happy you're coming back home. You can
That's beautiful. No, that's a very beautiful statement. It's absolutely 1,000% true. In other words, my show is national. I've lived in San Francisco, remember, since 1974. You know how long that is already? Do the math. I mean, I don't even want to do the math. It depresses me to do the math. But I've been here since 1974, off and on. But, you know, I never really left New York. I don't go there that often. Once my mother passed away, I never really went back. My publishers are in New York. In fact, my new publisher, God bless her, came out to see me. I had dinner with her Sunday night. I saw her for lunch yesterday. She's as Manhattan as they come. And actually, I have a bigger New York accent than she does. I said to her, how come you don't have a New York accent if you're born in Manhattan? She said, I don't know. It's bizarre. That was an interesting thing. That's an interesting thing. Do Manhattanites still have an accident? An accident or not?
I'm telling you, it sounds like you live right next door. I mean, don't lose it. It's precious.
No, I can't. I had the opportunity to hide myself in that way years ago. When I started in radio, they said, oh, he's too New York. He'll never make it. Well, I guess they were wrong. But the thing is, whatever. I mean, what's the point of hiding your accent? What are you going to get out of it?
Nope.
What do I want to sound like? You know, I almost use the word. I can't. It's a bad word in Italian. I'll say a schnook. That's not the word. It begins with a S, but it doesn't end with that. You know, I don't want to sound like a schnook from Nowhereville. Thanks for the call. So she's saying don't change. Now KSFO Brad says do change. Brad, go ahead. You're up. You're my producer for a day. What would you recommend?
Well, Michael, first of all, I wanted to say that I'm a longtime listener. You are an American hero, my friend. So I would not change a whole lot. I disagree 100% with Anthony, but agree with Joan. We need to hear the versatile Michael, and you need to bring that out in the first 2 weeks. You need to catch and capture that audience in the first 2 weeks, Michael. And that's your youth, your stickball, your dog, your nutritional background. All that's important. If you stick to just politics, you're going to lose half your demographic.
I agree. Well, first of all, you're 1,000% right. First of all, I would never stick just to politics because, look, Brad, I got to say this in a nice way. I do tune into other shows a minute here, a minute there. I don't understand it because I can predict what I'm going to hear. I don't care what time of day I turn it on. I know that within, I'd say, 5 to 10 words, I'm going to hear the word Obamacare or the Founding Fathers. I know I'm going to hear it. I don't want to hear it anymore.
Michael, I like listening to Sunday talk TV, but after 40 minutes, I'm sick of hearing the same stuff and a different opinion on the same stuff. You offer a hard-hitting opinion, and you're able to laugh at yourself and then tell a story about your youth, and that is what has attracted me to you for forever. And
Brad, I got to ask you something without divulging. You know, what do you do for a living?
I'm a I own a couple businesses around the San Francisco Bay Area.
You're laughing. Okay, that's interesting. Are they legitimate businesses or not?
Oh, yeah. No.
The way you said it, it sounded like they were a little on the crime and vice area. But, okay, so you've listened. You hear all the politics somewhere else. You don't tune in the show to get more politics, although you like when I get political because I hit it in my way. And you know what you did for me in many ways? You had me see myself in a clearer light. You actually helped me focus on what you're saying. Your image of me is an American individual with a very strong set of political opinions that's based upon his background, where he came from, his family, his growth from a kid in the Bronx to media superstar. It all reflects in my political viewpoint, and what you're saying is don't omit any of that.
And Michael, you don't sound like you were a TV broadcaster and fell off the truck and decided to get into radio. You sound like an American. That's what makes us gravitate to you. You sound like us. You state things like we want to state it. I'm born and raised in this Bay Area, and you and I both know how left-wing this is and how tough it is to get that opinion across. And
well, the Bay Area doesn't have a left-wing dominance. It has a broken-wing dominance. This is a broken, dysfunctional city of the type. You can't believe how sick this place is until you actually meet the people who are running it. They are corrupt. They're broken. It's a broken wing. It's not a left wing. You open up the San Francisco newspaper. Every other story is about sexuality or about the downtrodden minority. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. They had a YouTube up today of them attacking the police who were doing their job down in the Mission District. And this idiot with a cell phone is trying to show police brutality. The police knocked some sense into an ass on the sidewalk with a bicycle, and he got smart with them, and they gave him a good punch in the nose. All of a sudden, the crowd came running out of the Mission District. Well, these people don't work for a living. They live on welfare, and they got nothing to do but try to set the police up so the verminous lawyer from Oakland could go after them? That's the reaction I had, my friend.
Michael, God bless you. That's what we need. You know what's right, and you know where this country's going without that kind of attitude, without those kind of politics. And, you know, you've got to express that. What Joan said about coming home to New York is so right on the money. When I'm, like I said, born and raised here, but when I hear about your youth in New York, it's just, like I say, I gravitate to that. That's fantastic. That's how you're listening.
Great. You know, Brad, you're really great. I'll tell you what I want to do for you. First of all, I want you to get a free copy of my book. I'll send you one of the best ones I have. You know, I want to do something else, Brad. I want to have some kind of opening event sometime in January, somewhere in the Bay Area, like a closed thing for 50 people. If you give my guys your name and email, I will invite you to it. How's that? Hung up. Okay. No, I'm joking. No, he was from the NSA spying on me. No, what he's saying is something very interesting. In other words, be yourself, Michael. Well, of course, I have to be. But he's saying be more yourself. Don't lose yourself, Savage, in order to open that show. Don't think you have to lose yourself. Just be yourself is what he's really saying. But I've already decided on that. It's news, views, and reviews. Look what I've covered already today in this first 40 minutes of the show with two big, you know, commercial breaks. We look at this, the things we've touched on. Is Obama a socialist? I think I've defined pretty clearly he sure is. I did a mini review of this demented, perverted movie that stars Naomi Watts and Robin Wright, who used to be married to Sean Penn, and it's about two cougars who sleep with the other woman's son. Now, this is how degenerate Hollywood is getting. The mothers and sons hang out together, enjoying drunken dinners on a deck and dancing as the sun sets. And then, all of a sudden, it turns into a double date. Why are they producing a movie that has sort of a crypto incest theme? Why? Because Harvey and his friends don't know any better. The review in the LA Times, of all places, says Adore, which is the movie, though I don't recommend it, they say is a twisted sexual drama about misguided affections between older women and younger men, which wouldn't be all that outrageous if not for the dicey details, so let's not get right to it. Naomi Watts and Robin Wright, two of Hollywood's most beautiful and most accomplished women, play mothers who sleep with each other's sons. Do I have to say any more? In a country hypersensitive to sexual relations in virtually any form, a door is built on a kind of line crossing that doesn't rest so easily, which is to say, it's a challenging film, but maybe not as challenging as it should be. And then, it's based on Doris Lessing's novella. I'm sorry. The minute I read Doris Lessing, Miss Suicide, I should have known what it was about. Depressing and suicidal is how I would... God, Doris Lessing, she's popular now? Doris Lessing is suddenly popular? Unbelievable to me. Da-da-da-da. Now, I happen to like Naomi Watts. You know who she's married to, don't you? Again, I always forget his name. He plays that guy in the HBO. I always forget him. Lev Schreiber, who I still see as too soft for the role of Donovan. That's where Midnight Cowboy is a far better actor in that movie. John Voight plays the father Donovan in that series. John Voight should have been Donovan. And Lev Schreiber should have been a waiter. But nevertheless, she's married to him with children. But the the thing is this. I don't know. Someone I know saw it. The women I know saw it. They said it was disgusting. So I said, why'd you go see it? So one said, one woman said the other woman told her, didn't tell her what it was, what it was about. And the other woman says, I knew what it was about and I wanted to see it. I wouldn't go see it. Anyway, that's that. Don't see it. Adore. Maybe now you'll see it because I said, don't see it. Why would women go see a movie like, is that like every woman's fantasy? Middle-aged women have a secret desire to sleep with their friend's son? Cross-generational swapping? Decadent fantasy fulfillment masquerading as a declaration of feminist independence? Is that what we're talking about? I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
We are wandering around the radio world tonight on the Savage Nation, wandering and wondering, and I'm asking, wondering and asking, mixing it in with the news of the day, and, you know, that's what I do. It's that simple, because that's the format that I like best. It's the method I like best to get across my, shall I say, my political point of view. Yeah, well, you know, is politics everything? It really is. Everything is political. The pot roast I ate today was political. Because I normally eat a very lean diet. I had created a phrase many years ago, you know, about my nutritional attitudes. And I was one of the... I always ate lean after childhood because I knew that the diets killed my father and that whole generation died. I mean, the meats and all I ate was meat and potatoes. 50, 49, 52. Look at the gravestones. Didn't matter the ethnic group. Smoked, drank, you know, 7 and 7, garbage. Ugh. I don't even know. They drank the wine you never heard of. And if they didn't drink, it was like 7 and 7 and meat and potatoes, toothpicks, undershirts. Whatever. The point is I didn't eat like that. I ran from it. So I said, okay, I'm going to reinvent myself when I was 28 because I said, okay, I got to live. Didn't know much and fell into the whole nutrition thing. Then got the PhD in it. Mega doses of vitamin C, vitamin E, this and that. I don't want to go through the whole litany in a lean diet. But today I craved the father, the diet of the fathers. It was unbelievable. So I ordered from the local Italian restaurant. It was so good, I almost fainted. Pot roast and ravioli. I'm laughing because it tasted so. The dog was looking at me like, oh my God, he's slurping and dipping the bread. And I can't give it to him because it's too got a little spice in it. So I said, Teddy, you only eat carrots and I don't have any. But wait a minute. There's steamed broccoli. And I gave him, I heard dogs eat broccoli. A lot of people have dogs who eat broccoli. He scarfed down the broccoli. We both went away happy. Then I watched the Tyson thing on HBO in the middle of the day. And I decided to be a bum. I didn't want to exercise, bicycle, walk. Didn't want to look at the world. I stayed in before the show. What am I getting up so early? Every morning at 6:45, the show is on it 12 hours later. It is the old Lenny Bruce joke when he's on the road. And I never forget it. It was the funniest thing I ever heard of all the stuff he did. He's on the road, the phone rings in his motel at 7 in the morning. Ring, ring. Yeah, who's that? It's Mr. Schindler, Miss Sugar. How are you? Who? Mr. Schindler, we met last night at the club. Did I wake you? And he says, no, I always get up 14 hours before my show. I was died laughing because it reminds me of me. I'm getting up at 6:45 every day because I have blackout curtains In every house I own, the first thing I put in are blackout curtains. I don't care where, because I've got to control my environment. Because I like to sleep during the day sometimes for an hour, half an hour. But in the morning, no matter how blacked out, you know, light's going to peek through. Bingo, 6:45 now. I'm up, and it's like, oh, stay away from that computer. On the way to the kitchen, don't do a, no U-turn, no divergence, stay away. Don't go near that poison. Don't look at the news. Don't look at your emails. Go into the kitchen. Go outside. Talk to the birds. Take the, whatever you got to do, and I'm there. 4 minutes later, bingo, emails. There's the 28 emails, and you scan to see what the dangers are, the danger signs. There was an article on Drudge where it says, I don't know from which article it was, that people who go on the computer stop breathing. Go on the computers, I laughed. They turn on the computer and they stop breathing. They're like, oh my God, what am I going to find? I didn't know it's true. Many of us stop breathing when we turn it on. Then the news, and that's it. Then I'm locked in already. I say, I'm only going to do it for half an hour. Then it's 3 hours later. That's what happens. So, yeah, I get up real early. I haven't even done what I wanted to do today. Now, I have only 2 minutes, 30 seconds. I can't do it. I can't develop. It's impossible. When I'm in one of my moods and it's like right now, great show, running well, impossible. A young man, saxophone player from Los Angeles, grew up listening to me from through his parents, and over the years captured my radio poems that I didn't even know I was speaking. The Found Poetry, Dr. Michael Savage, edited by Sam Gendel. And he sent it to me, all typeset. I couldn't believe what I was listening to. I didn't even know I had said these things. So I called him, and I said, Sam, blah, blah, blah. He's a top-flight, young, unknown saxophone player. Where do you hear him? In the next hour, you're going to hear him. He cuts sounds from my poems, and I'm only going to do three of them. He cut music to go with it, and I'm going to read it on the air, okay? You'll picture yourself in a club listening to it. That's what I'm going to do. I don't have Rand Paul or Ted Cruz or Newt Gingrich on.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
It is The Savage Nation, and we're rolling into the second hour tonight. If you just joined us, ladies and gentlemen, we are discussing a primary question. And the question is, when I opened my show January 2nd, 2014, at the New Hours, in the New Hours, you're the producer for the day. We're working together all of December to open the new show. Say, Savage, you got a winning formula, don't change a thing. Say, Savage, you got to change something. Savage, you got to change everything. Savage, change your name, change the opening. We don't want to hear anything but politics. We want you to have Newt Gingrich and Rand Paul and Rubio on. We want you to do just like Wallbanger does. We want you to promote a television show, even if you don't have one. No, I'm just joking. But this is all sorts of ideas. But the thing is, I'm not going to do any of that. That's number one. I'm asking you, though, to be my producer. Try to be a producer. Throw out a good idea. I have a few ideas. By the way, we did a new opening tonight, Home of Borders, Language, Culture. Did you like it or not? You know why I did that? I decided if my audience is going to be three times larger or more, they said put three zeros on the end. That means 1,000 times larger, which it will be, right? So, okay, and now I'm on Science Zone Radio, Michael Savage, Science Zone Radio, Home of Borders, Language, Culture. Said, oh, some guy's listening to that somewhere in America. He says, Borders, Language, Culture. So immediately they know where I'm coming from. Sets it up. Borders, Language, Culture. Say, okay, I can relate to that. That transcends race. That almost transcends politics. Anyone who's an American can relate to that, except the left-wing wackadoodles who hate the country. Right? So I figured that's who I am anyway. But I want to ask you what you think. Then we're going to go in this hour to what I promised you. The little radio poems, the few of them. I want you to hear what I'm doing. I'm putting something new together. I'm inventing. I'm creating. This is a performance. Radio is a performance. And yes, you know my politics. The politics are the core of my performance, not an addendum to my politics. But that doesn't mean, okay, it's like the old thing, if you read psychology when you were young, if you went to college, you read something about set and frame. It was very early teachings in psychology. What is set and what is frame? In a situation or in a conversation, there's a set and a frame. So that's an interesting thing to say. In other words, you could put politics out front and do that day and night. Fine. Some do it. They do it well. I don't. I've always made it part, but not the entire package. Why? Because I'm more than politics. And secondly, you can get that anywhere else. And thirdly, when you think about it, I'll be following Rush. So all your political stuff you're going to get from him, if you listen to him at all. I mean, I don't know. Some do, some don't. I hope you do. Nice. His third hour will grow wherever I'm on after him. He should know that. He should get off his high, Gulf Stream and understand that I'm a benefit to him. But all right, I don't need it. He don't need me. I don't need him. Okay, he's a world unto himself. He runs the Rush Limbaugh cartel of radioology. And that's his deal. But I broke free of that mountain man, and I broke free, frankly, of that whole cartel. They had me marginalized, they thought. They had me where they wanted me. You know, wrong syndicator for a long while, then marginal stations for a long while, then bad time slot. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, how did this happen? We should control that. Well, you can't control everything. The times, they are changing. As Bob Dylan said in that great song, "In the Times They Are Changing." Play "The Times They Are Changing." There's a line in there, like, "The loser is now the win." I love that line. Because in many ways, all of us feel like that.
The loser now will be later to win, for the times they are changing.
Very emotional statement. I got chills up and down my body. I'm in a sweat from that line. Because I went into it. I really felt it. I got to tell you, I felt it. I feel like I've been down all my life. I've been down so long, it's starting to look like up to me. You know that phrase, don't you? I am so used to being on the outside of things that I can never, ever be on the inside of things. Do you understand that? That's a take on the take. That's a take on Groucho Marx's famous line that any club that would have me as a member I wouldn't join, which is very funny, but that's not what I'm saying. I've been an outsider so long, there is no way for me to ever pretend to be an insider, and I don't intend to start in January. Do you understand what I just said? Because that's almost the zeitgeist of what we've been talking about all night tonight on the show. I'm asking you to be my producer, my audience, my loyal audience, because that's who's listening tonight. I can guarantee you this is a diehard core audience. This is it. This is the inner circle. I don't know who else is on the show, but these lights are so hot, it looks like a tilted pinball machine. That's how hot the lights are tonight. I don't know why, but they're there for me. They're as excited as I am about that opening. But everyone is saying be yourself, because that's all I can be anyway. The thing is, but they're saying something else without even knowing it. What they were really saying is, Michael, we're all outsiders. You speak for us. You can't pretend that you're an insider, because you're not. And that's why I don't have the famous guests on. Politicians won't come near the show, by and large. They're afraid of it. Big actors won't come near the show. They're afraid of it. They may agree with me. Many of them love me. They love my show. But they're afraid of identifying with somebody who's absolutely an authentic American in that regard. And by the way, I am an authentic American, period. End of story. I am an immigrant son. Maybe I ought to do that rap for you one of these days. Well, without further ado, what I want to do is this. Take a couple of calls, and when I come back, I will start playing three of the Savage Nation found radio poems, because I think you're going to be amazed. I want to take some calls, though. And there was one caller with the books. Where was this, the book thing? I lost it already. He hung up. Sabatino on WFTL in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Michael, as your producer, I've been on the phone for a while. A lot of people stole my thunder, so to speak, but I'm going to give it a shot. I think with all the new listeners you're going to have in your new time slot, I mean, I've been listening to you forever. I think you're going to so fascinate these people. And I'll tell you why. In my opinion, I listen to all these conservative talk show hosts. on and off all day. And I live in a condo. You might find this amusing. And I sit out on my porch, and I find myself yelling at the radio, shut up already. I know. We know this. You know, and I think...
Well, that's right. That's my emotion. I said, stop it. I feel like static in my ear.
Exactly. And you know, these people in my condo think I'm crazy, but I mean...
Well, welcome to the club.
Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome to the crazy radio club.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, but listen, it's a long day part, Sabatino, and people are going to do what they got to do, and they're going to do their politics. They're never going to change. I am highly political, but that's not all I do. So you're saying stick to what you do, which is all of it.
Well, yeah, and if I may, you know, when you come on, you have a totally unique perspective, not only with politics, but everything you say. And you have a great sense of humor, which is entertaining, and you're entertaining as well as informative.
Yeah, but even when I'm depressed, I can be entertaining because I have a gallows sense of humor and a sarcasm and cynicism that gets me through the darkest moments.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that touches a raw nerve with so many millions of people who feel the same way. They drift through the day. They see their country going to pieces. They see this creature in the White House who was destroying everything and getting away with it. And they don't know what to do, and they don't want to be despairing. They don't want to be depressed and get anguished. So they stop listening at a certain point. I think that's another element here of getting fed up with it. In other words, not that the other guys are wrong, but how much can you listen to them without freaking out?
Exactly, and I freak out, and your show's refreshing. That's why I think, you know, your new time slot is just going to fascinate people, you know, and how do you improve on that? You know,
you can't. That's it. That's as simple as that. Well, thank you. That's called a one-off. It's that simple. Or we used to say in New York when we didn't like someone, when God made him, he broke the mold. And that was a sort of that was a two-edged put down and put up, you know. Chris on WABC, welcome to the program. Be my producer. What would you recommend?
Mike, obviously you can't change the show. The show is the reason why you're going to this primetime slot. The only suggestion I would have is that maybe in this first initial 2 weeks, if you read some of those short written stories that you have, obviously your antidotes come naturally. No one can touch you. But
Wait, you're saying read from Train Tracks, Boy in the River, Slum Dialect, Boy in the Basement, that kind of thing?
Yes. Those stories, the fact that you're reading, they're written, it separates you. You're an educated man, a written author, not like those people just spewing air and venom. So by you reading those stories, one of those, sooner or later, you either crack a smile or you shed a tear. I mean, that I got hooked on your show about 10 years ago when you did the When Pasta Was Spaghetti.
Oh, my God. I love that. We have it ready for another night. Yeah, that was a great. That's a great. We have that on sound with a little backdrop, but we had it cut up. You must be of the Italian faith. I mean, not faith.
Yeah,
you're of Italian descent, no doubt, right, Chris?
100%. You know what? I was laughing, and I kid you not, almost tearing. I knew exactly what you were talking about. It's hysterical, and I think that.
What? When Pasta Was Spaghetti?
Yeah, I'm not supposed to be. As soon as I heard it, I hit the set button, and I've been listening ever since. So,
That was written in an airplane in a storm over Cheyenne, Wyoming at 35,000 feet when everyone thought it was going to go down and people were screaming. In those days, I ordered another two little bottles of whiskey, and I started to write. And that's when I wrote When Pasta Was Spaghetti.
That's what you came up with, the plane.
Chris, thanks. That's beautiful. Hey, do we have time to fire off When Pasta Was Spaghetti before the break? Neil, can we get it up? You think we can do it? Let's grab it. We'll do it. I like that thing. I could save it, you know, for another time because I still want to get to the new stuff we're going to do tonight. Or I could just read it cold right on. You got it? You got it? Play it or I'll read it. You got it? We're playing Italian music because I have a treat for you. I found the poem When Pasta Was Spaghetti in my archives. It was written, let's see. Michael Savage, August 1985, written in a lightning storm at 40,000 feet over Cheyenne, Wyoming. When I thought the plane was going to crash, I wrote When Pasta Was Spaghetti. So here it is, whether you like it or not, all right? So you liberals get ready to sneer, and you sane people get ready to enjoy it because it's a wonderful poem. So play the music again. Go ahead. They got the mood. We got the mood set up. It's called When Pasta Was Spaghetti. And try to imagine it, all right? The hairy forearms of New York serve you your coffee with a turning gesture, an offering that says drink, eat, enjoy. The wiry Italian in Vincent's clam bar, the one behind the greased over register, the young kid connected who receives his deference from the spaghetti cook older than his gangster father, the spaghetti cook who looks like an old-fashioned doctor from the Bronx with clipped mustache. He actually pulls some noodles out of the pot and eats them as they cook, looking to the grimy ceiling for his tender answer. Well, they used to call it spaghetti. Now it's pasta at $10 a plate. The smoky windows of Romeo's Spaghetti now offers radios and knickknacks. It was 50 cents a plate then, in neon letters that you couldn't miss, even through a fogged over window on a cold winter's eve. There was life. Marinara sauce that smacked to the sea. Noodles as long as your young arm. Meatballs as fluffy as your dream of them. Bread on the table you'd eat against your parents' admonitions that the meal was coming, the meal was coming. And men, some burly with black hairy forearms whose smile scared you, and little skinny guys with the look of murder on their faces, and people who slurped their spaghetti straight to their mouths from the plate, one motion like Chinese shoveling rice at mouth with clicking sticks. That was gusto before it became a beer ad. That was taste before it became a synonym for fashion. That was spaghetti before it became pasta. Play the music, basta.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Tackling the subjects they told you never to talk about on the only conservative station in the Bay Area. Hot Talk 560, KSFO.
All right, let me give you the latest news headlines before this break. These are from the top of the Drudge Report. For those of you who don't jump on the computer, Michelle goes to the rescue for Obama. She's now come to bat for him on Obamacare. Plans in D.C. cover abortion, not hearing aids. Colorado man signs up, his dog gets covered instead. No one signs in Oregon. Insurer stops advertising. Hackers can access private info on healthcare.gov. Perksy's way in health plans for lawmakers, no kidding. Clinton filmmaker spent 101 nights at White House. White House, Obama skips Gettysburg address because of, quote, whole website thing. Drops God from address. Donor fatigue. Price of tickets to California fundraiser slashed in half. Knockout game fears spread. That's blacks of packs of black kids running around beating up white people. I know you're not allowed to say it, but what the heck? What the heck? Maybe we can protect ourselves from what's coming by talking about what's happening. Drivers pulled over asked for DNA samples by federal contractors. Well, you get the picture. Yeah, what's this with U.S. troops in Afghanistan for years? They did a deal, Obama, anti-war Obama, strikes a deal where he's going to apologize to the warlord Karzai and agree to keep U.S. troops in Afghanistan for years. What are we doing in Afghanistan? Can anyone answer the question? No one knows. I don't know why we're there. I have no idea why we're in Afghanistan. The bravery of our men aside, why are we wasting their manhood on that hellhole? Can anyone explain it to me why we're there? He came to power saying he'd end the war. Now what, he's expanding the war. Duh. Yeah, I'll be the most transparent administration in history, and so I'll prove it by becoming the most secretive spying SOB that ever in whatever. Tom DeLay overturned conviction, one that is good. Tom DeLay, the Terminator, the exterminator. Maybe he'll become the Terminator now. Oh, is he going to get even with those rats who put him away? He ought to get out the raid for them. Go, Tom, go. I liked Tom DeLay when he was around. That's when the Republicans still had someone with a pair of 2x4s.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Join me, Brian Sussman, 5 to 9 a.m. here on KSFO.
All right, so you are the producer of the Savage Nation. Be a producer for the night. And I'm saying to you, we're working together from now until January 1. Show opens on Broadway. We have a number of weeks left. You're the producer. How would you change my show, if at all? What would you recommend? And you're calling like crazy on this, which is great. But I also promise you something else tonight, and that is this. A while ago, I received by email from an unknown listener named, I'll tell you who he is, a thing called the found poetry of Dr. Michael Savage. I had no idea what it was. And he says, these are the found poems of American talk show host and writer Dr. Michael Savage, as edited by American artist and musician Sam Gundell. According to Encyclopedia Britannica, a found poem is one consisting of words found in a non-poetic context and usually broken into lines that convey a verse rhythm. The editor has taken measures to preserve the undeniable quality of Dr. Savage's language and claims no rights to the work. He, the editor, has merely acted to frame language as art, offering various topics as explored by Savage, but through an explicitly poetic lens. The editor hopes that the reader will begin to recognize a common thread weaving through this body of poems, and that he, the reader, will remember that what follows is, quote, one man's opinion, an opinion that is sharp, humorous, and most importantly, human. Then I open it up, and I see a contents page, 48 pages of stuff I don't even remember saying, broken into lines laid out by poems. So I call this guy up, and it turns out he's a sax player and a good one, really good one. And I say, Sam, this is great. Let's collaborate. He's 26. I'm older than 26. And there's a magic on the phone. And I said, Sam, cut some music for these pieces. I'll play them on the show. So he cut some music, and I didn't get a chance to listen to them till today. So instead of talking about this, let me get the first one. Why don't we start with, just give me a second now. I got to start it. I never did this live, so it's going to be a little rough. Here's a piece he found that I did a while ago called Diplomat. And this was me talking about John Kerry not too long ago. I had no idea he would turn it into this verse for my words. So let's hear Sam Gundell's saxophone, and I'll try to read it as a backup. Go ahead. The perfect suit, the watch, the wedding ring, the manicure, the hand usage, the eyebrows, the use of the hands, the watch, the wedding ring, the skilled performance of the professional, how impressed he is with himself. My, does he love himself, the sound of his own voice. My, does he love watching himself hold court before the world and those hands. I guess Teddy didn't like it. He started the bar. I don't know what that means. Okay, Teddy, we'll kill that one. We'll cut that out of the... No, that's Teddy in the background of the studio. This is live radio. I mean, I'm taking into the performance here. We're rehearsing. So I'll do one more. It's either, oh, Mothers. He loved Mothers. Hold it. I got to find Mothers. Mothers is on page 12. Hold on, guys. Page 12. Sam's music is behind me. Okay. Line 12, Mothers, 13 seconds title. Okay, go with Mothers. In my day, if there was an entertainer, the first thing the mothers would say was that he was a family man and would never cheat on his wife. The women cared about that in those days. They would be in the kitchen, moving around the breadcrumbs with the serrated knife on the oilcloth tablecloth. The women would talk, and I don't know why, but I was always in the dining room listening to what the wise women were saying. They would sift the crumbs with their serrated bread knives, and by the time the coffee hour was over and those women got through talking and the crumbs were very finely sifted, they had resolved all the personal problems in their lives and all of the world's problems, and I felt the world was a good place to live in. Now that's, this young man cut those original sounds for me and sent them to me by MP3, and we put them together with my voice live just now, never done before. And I'd like to have Sam on the show for a few minutes to talk about this collaboration before we go back to what we were doing. Could anyone dial up Sam or we get him on the show for a minute or two? It's okay. You can take your time with it, because I got to tell you what happened. He sent me the MP3 last Thursday. I didn't get a chance to listen to it over the weekend. I got involved with a lot of social stuff, which I rarely do. And then all of a sudden, today in the morning, I played these pieces. My guy's transferred his MP3 into a CD. So I threw it on the table with my old stereo, and I plugged it into this 5-disc changer that I have. This old Sony must be 20 years old. And I've only been playing jazz from the Blue Note series. So I put it in, and I started to try to find it. And it was so good, I said, what do you mean? There's words on it. I thought it was the Blue Note. I thought he was like Miles. I didn't know who he was. I didn't know it was him. But he had read my words over his music. He's professionally excellent. He's a real talented artist. And I want to have him on the show if we can get him for a minute or two so we can talk a little bit about where I'm going to go with this and what he thinks as a young listener talk radio is all about, because he grew up on this show. He'll tell you that story if we can find it. If not, we'll do it another time. Let's take some callers while we're waiting for Sam. WDRC, Terry, welcome to the Savage Nation. You're my producer for the day. What would you recommend?
First of all, Michael, I'd like to say that you're one of my heroes. I have been listening to you for years. You are the only talk show host that says it the way it is. And I cannot tell you how much I look forward to listening to you.
Well, let me be fair. Others do as well. Some of them are very, very clear on what they believe. So let's be clear. And there's a lot of broadcast time. But I'm glad and appreciate that you hear my particular voice, you know. So are you looking forward to the new hours? Are you going to be able to listen to Drive Time in Connecticut?
Oh, yeah, hon. Right now it's 10 of 11 and you're going off. We don't get you 3 hours here in Northwest Connecticut. So the next person that comes on would be Mr. Huckabee. But I wish that I had you for the last hour, but I will the next time that you're on in January. So I'll be listening.
Yes, you will. You'll have, I think, all the 3 hours, and I thank you very much, darling. Keep listening. 855-400-7282. Be my producer. What would you recommend for the new show, the new hours, the drive time? Pat on WFTL in Florida. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
How are you doing, Michael?
Good, Pat. What would you recommend?
If I were going to be your producer, I wouldn't change anything. You're a one-man variety show.
It's true. I got the hat. I got the trumpet. I got the tap dancing shoes. I got the cane. I got the dog. It does feel like that. It's like every night I got to come out and do a show. It's unbelievable. It's a one-man show. It really is. It's very hard, Pat.
Well, I can understand, but it's a one-man variety show for intelligent people, too. I might want
to... Yeah, well, that's the truth. I'm trying to be the Pied Piper of America. Let's put it that way. The Pied Piper of Borders, Language, and Culture. Does that say it all?
That I don't see how you can offend anybody.
Well, I can't offend anybody who loves the country. And those I offend ought to move with Harvey Weinstein to the Ukraine. Thanks for the call. Let him go back to his roots. Let Harvey go back to his roots. Well, as promised, the young man who, Sam Gendel, is listening. He's the saxophone player. Sam, thanks for joining us on the Savage Nation.
Grooving, Dr. Savage.
So, Sam, tell the audience, if you don't mind, in a short version, how you started listening to the show when you were a kid.
My dad and mom would play you in the car going to school on vacations, you know, and I'd have to listen to you. So I just started, and that was all I knew. And then little by little, I started to pay attention as I grew older, and I said, oh, there's something to this. And then I got into jazz, of course, and then it made sense with the jazz for some reason. Your voice and the rhythm of your speech and the language, it all made sense all of a sudden with the jazz. I said, ah, now I see. Okay. And then, you know, that's the story.
So, Sam, just a quick note without giving anything away. You grew up, as I understand, in a small California ranching town.
Yeah, it's a small agricultural town in Central California.
Oh, that's very unusual, because one would say, how does a guy like that become a saxophone player in Los Angeles playing nightclubs? I mean, because if someone saw you, they'd say, he's a hipster. Would you identify? I mean, that's how they would identify you in the broad stroke. Is that correct?
I don't know about me, because that comes with a certain way of speaking and dress, which I don't have either. I came to L.A. to actually study music, but also I was in a medical program in college, studying to be a, you know, go to medical school. And then I quickly left that after I saw what was going on.
Well, you better not tell Obama that, because he's liable to put out something called Music Care, where he takes over the music industry. He says, you know, everyone's entitled to music. And it's unfair for some people to get music and some not to get music. So we're creating Music Care, and we'll be disseminating music across the nation running out of the White House. Unfortunately, our website won't be ready until the year 2053. So, Sam, you make your living now by performing in small jazz clubs around L.A., is that correct?
Yeah, in L.A. I also tour. I've played in Europe, Japan. You know, I tour as well, so... you know.
All right, but when I look, Sam, I'm not just blowing smoke. When I heard your music, you don't know if a person's going to be good or bad. And when I got your tapes, I said I'm afraid to listen to them because I was afraid of being disappointed. But you are really at the top of the rung here. Are you classically trained in music?
Not really. I'm mostly self-taught because I grew up in a small town. But I had the best teachers. I had records. My dad he's not a musician, but he's an aficionado, and he turned me on to Lester Young, Coltrane, Miles Davis. I mean, all the greats. Like when he saw that I was interested, he never pushed on me. But when he saw that I was interested, he said, "You know, you're interested. Check these guys out." And I said, "Whoa, okay, there it is."
But Sam, how did you capture these little things in this book? What was the process? What did you do to grab these radio poems?
This is just the way I hear you. You know, you speak. This is what's happening in my mind. In the same way that you articulate the architecture of your mind with your voice and a microphone in front of a green curtain night after night, that's the way, you know, all I did was merely articulate the architecture of my mind on a page. Simple as that. So, I can...
But are all of these words my words, or did you change them?
All your words. No, they're all your words. It's your language. I mean, there are things omitted for the sake of poetry and for the page.
Ah, so that's why they read the way they read. You cut out some of the verbiage to make them more tightly conform to the concept of, as you say, the found poetry.
Yeah, because poetry, I see poetry as a distillation of the language. You know, it's like a shot of tequila.
That's well done. That's well done. That's well done. Distillation. Poetry is the distillation of language. I like that. You know, Sam, I began as a poet. People don't know that. I began as a poet in the East Village of New York City way back when I was an unknown social worker. I mean, who wasn't a poet? I had no recognition whatsoever. I thought some of the things I wrote were interesting, but no one ever, you know, published them or knew anything about them. And you know, I evolved, but I never stopped writing, and I evolved into all the other things I've done. But as I've gotten to this stage now, and I've climbed now to the pinnacle of where I am going to be, I decided to take a risk tonight, Sam, and reintroduce that which I started with, but in this sense, from the political poetry, political poetic point of view, with your editing and your music. And I think most of what you captured here is almost 100% political, isn't it?
I would say so, yeah.
Like here, poseurs. I mean, I'm looking for political. Oh, I love this one, Sam. Get out your saxophone. Here's a great one, the dining room. It was such a small dining room that you risked castration. If you didn't bend back as you were passing a chair, you were constantly having to contort. Then you'd hit your head against the woman's sprayed hair. It was crazy and wonderful in that tiny dining room.
That's what it comes down to, right? She's the family.
Yeah, but I mean, is that political, or what is that? That's not really political.
We'll have to let everyone figure that out. I mean, that's just the family.
Yeah, and family is quite political today, isn't it?
I guess, but that's the beauty of it, is that you always come back to family, which is the most empirical political unit that we have since the beginning of time, you know, in a cave.
Sam, how would you, as a 26-year-old jazz musician in Los Angeles, define yourself politically?
Ooh.
Well, wait a minute. Don't say it, because I want you to continue performing as a jazz musician in Los Angeles. let's leave it at that. I mean, I really don't want to put you into a pigeonhole any more than you did with me. You didn't put me in a pigeonhole here, because most of these selections, in my opinion, are almost apolitical. Here's one, Sam. Remember this one, The Will to Go On?
Oh, yeah.
Neil, can you play any of his music, and I'll read The Will to Go On. It's five lines. A half-crushed ant, it crawls, still wanting to live, by instinct, survival unto itself. A reason to carry on. Now, how would you pick that out of the cacophony of radio all day long, Sam, and your own life, your own thoughts, your own headspace to deal with? How would you pick something out like that out of the out of the avalanche of words that come at you, not only from my show, but from all the other things you hear all day? How do you catch that?
I mean, to tell you the truth, I think that's a question for the man upstairs, because I've thought about that time and time again, and I have 3 new poems on my desktop just from a few days ago of yours. That it's just, they just come out. It's just the way I hear you, and it's just the way I hear the world, I guess. I mean, it's not just you. It's the way I walk down the street, and that's what I see, and ding, you know, it's just the way I am, just like you are.
Sam, how can my many, many loyal listeners who love me and now are going to love you, how can they find you? What's your website? Where can they go and find your stuff?
They just go to my website, samgendel.com, my last name, G-E-N-G-E-L. And I have a Facebook page, you know, I have all that, but my website...
Well, I want them to go and buy your CDs and hear what a great musician you are. And we'll have you on again, Sam, from time to time. And I'm sorry, Neil? We'll put it on my website, Sam. We'll do whatever we can, because I have found my Boswell. Sam Gendel, thanks a million for listening. And we'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Conservative, and not mad about it. Join the discussion with Governor Mike Huckabee, weekdays 9 till noon, on Hot Talk 560, KSFO.
Chomping on a Pop-Tart. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. My board op is Neil. I said, Neil, you're eating. What are you eating? He said, I'm chomping on a Pop-Tart. I said, you better not say that to Sam Gendel. He's liable to compose a tune to go with it, chomping on a Pop-Tart. It almost has the feeling of a jazz tune. So as I said to the young man, I said, you're my Boswell. I found my Boswell. Most of you don't know who he is. Boswell is best known for the biography he wrote on the great English literary figure Samuel Johnson. So you say, well, what does that have to do with anything? Well, his surname has passed into the English language as a term. Boswell now means a constant companion and observer, especially someone who records those observations in print. In A Scandal in Bohemia, Arthur Conan Doyle's character Sherlock Holmes says of Dr. Watson, who narrates the tales, he says, I am lost without my Boswell. In many ways, this young man, without us ever having met, is somewhat of my Boswell. He caught the gist of the whole thing. But on top of it all, it's not just him catching my gist. He took his music and put it to it for the first time today, and I think it's the beginning of a collaboration. And I think it's going to be a one-man show, or maybe a two-man show one day, if I can put that together. Could you imagine that as a sort of set? Me sitting there, sit with a set like two corners of a wall, stool, set like the Village Vanguard in the 1960s. He's playing the sax with a beret. We'll give him a beret. I'm reading on the stool. We infuse the place with heavy cigarette smoke to drive out just about everyone. I hate cigarette smoke, but we have to have pseudo-cigarette smoke to recapture the mood of that time. People are still drinking Black Russians.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hot Talk 560, KSFO. KSFO.
Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Okay, welcome to hour number 3 of the Savage Nation, Teddy, for Tuesday, November 19th, 2013. I want you and all the other poodles out there to listen carefully. The president has been seen again and heard. Well, I don't know if he's been heard, but he gave a speech where he says Washington politics are holding back growth. Whenever a progressive says growth, what they mean is growth towards more Marxism. He closes his speech at the Wall Street Journal conference by saying some people call him a socialist, and he said to laughter, his accusers need to get out into the world more. He said, quote, You've got to meet real socialists to know what a real socialist, he said, noting that he advocates a lower corporate tax rate and that the stock market is, quote, doing pretty good. Well, my friends, what a loaded statement that is for today's show. Are all real socialists anti-business? Not in today's world. In fact, there are many fiscal socialists. They began with George Bush. That's one story. America is told that he's not a socialist. You know, if you're on Wall Street, he's not a socialist, is he? What is he? He's a vulture capitalist because they put him in power. What else is in the news? Let's go to michaelsavage.com, home of Borders. Well, we did a lot of things, Borders, Language, and Culture today. We did some very interesting things today. Morose Obama asks base for psychological intervention. Oh, boy. Savage moving to Drive Time, January 1, 2014. Mark your calendars. Mark the date. Email it. Obama White House ordered Kerry to support the Muslim Brotherhood. Al Jazeera America fails to attract U.S. audience. It averaged just 13,000 terrorists a day. I mean viewers a day. Is that 13,000 terrorists in the country and fellow travelers? How do you like that? What have we talked about today? Well, I made all of you a producer for the day. I asked you, what would you like to see me do the first week in the new time slot in January? What would you change about the Michael Savage Show? Should the show be more about politics, news, lifestyle, or stay the same? And how would you introduce the new Savage Nation to a new audience? Then I asked you, why do you listen to the show? And also, we did something very special for you today. I read some of my radio poems set to jazz music, never done before in the history of radio. And also today, Obama did a conference call with his organizers. He mixed up numbers. He said, in the first month alone, we've seen more than 100 million Americans successfully enroll in the new insurance plans. He was only off by a few because it's 100,000. That's all. See, when he taxes you, let's say, $100, he thinks he's taxing you $1.
In the first month alone, we've seen more than 100 million Americans already successfully enroll in the new insurance plans. You've got 1 million Americans who completed an application for themselves or their families. And that represents about a million and a half people. And of those 1.5 million people, you've already got a bunch of folks who've successfully signed up to get coverage. And you've got almost 400,000 folks who could gain access to Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. So effectively, in a month, we've already got 500,000 Americans who will likely have the security of health care for the first time in some cases in their lives as soon as January 1st.
There's much more out there. You can't believe this. Harvey Weinstein, you know who he is, says Obama's not embarrassing. The country's embarrassing.
This is the only country in the world where we don't have health care. Mm. Countries embarrass us around the world. And this is the only country in the world where we don't have a gun law. Mm. I watched you, you know, talk about that. Mm. You know, quite frankly, it's embarrassing. Obama's not embarrassing. The country's embarrassing.
And then, of course, we did a little thing on the movie Adore, which hit a new low. I'm talking about it for a reason. It's about two middle-aged mothers who seduce each other's sons.
God, Lil, look at that. Did we do that? We must have done. We certainly did. They're beautiful. They're like young gods. Amazing. Yeah. Did all right.
Does it get any lower than that? But then again, Robin Wright Penn is Sean Penn's ex-wife. So what would you expect from this old hag? Oprah said, racists have to die for racism to end. I didn't make that up. Old white men have to die, then racism will end.
Of course, problem is not solved. You know, as long as people can be judged by the color of their skin, the problem's not solved. As long as there are people who still, and there's a whole generation, I said this for apartheid South Africa. I said this for my own, you know, community in the South. There are still generations of people, older people, who were born and bred and marinated in it, in that prejudice and racism, and they just have to die.
Why, you must ask, is Oprah Winfrey suddenly stirring up such vile feelings in so many people, almost to egg people onto a civil war? Why? Why are so many pushing America in the direction of a race war? Why? You do know that there's a spate of wildings running around the streets now. Shall I tell you like it is? Because I will. Because it's a fact, and the fact unto itself is supportable. Case after case after case of groups of young black males attacking white people and beating them almost to death. Happening all over the country, swept under the rug, and yet you're acting as though you don't know why this is happening. And now you have Oprah Winfrey throwing charcoal light of fuel on the fire. You have this creature from the Black Lagoon on MSNBC throwing charcoal lighter on the embers. You have Harvey Weinstein throwing charcoal lighter on the embers, all for a reason. Are they trying to provoke a race war in the country? What are they trying to do? Do liberals understand what they're doing and why they're doing it? Or is there some other reason that this foulness is suddenly emanating from them? It's a question that has to be answered because this has to stop. This has to stop because this will yield a disaster for America if this keeps up. If we had a legitimate leader, and I mean that exactly what I just said, if we had a legitimate leader, he is the legitimate president, but he's not a legitimate leader. He has no leadership qualities whatsoever. If we had a legitimate leader, this wouldn't be happening. So you have to ask yourself, is somebody behind the president making calls or sending emails out to these people telling him to say these things? Is it Axelrod? Is it Jarrett? Do you know that Kerry and Obama are screaming to the other Western nations to stop moving towards more sanctions on Iran? Do you understand what Obama is doing? What did I write in my book, Trickle Down Tyranny? What did I say? He treats our enemies like friends and our friends like enemies. You know I was right. But what's the good of being right when you have an out-of-control rogue dictatorship in the United States of America? They answer to nobody. The most secretive administration in modern American history. The most corrupt, divisive administration in American history. And now they're trying to provoke race hatred at the same time stabbing not only Israel but other allies in the back. Can you imagine you live in a time when France becomes Israel's ally and we become Israel's enemy? Would you believe that would happen? So now I want to play something for you that is shocking. It's Obama gave a speech that was closed, of course, to the public in his fashion of the secret centralized government that he's running, to the Wall Street Journal, a big supporter of Obama. As you well know, what you don't understand is what the connection is between socialism and capitalism and how there's actually a confluence of the two isms at the highest levels. And I want you to listen to this disingenuous statement in clip one.
I would distinguish between the rhetoric and the tactics versus the ideological differences. I mean, in most countries, you've got, you know, people call me a socialist sometimes, but no, you got to meet real socialists. you'll have a sense of what a socialist is.
Well, my friends, I know what a socialist is. I've written about it. He's a socialist. Let me give you an example of why the president is lying. He's so clever at what he does that the yes man who invited him to speak at the Wall Street Journal giggled like we're all crazy for calling him a socialist. So let's go to none other than the Merriam-Webster Dictionary and look up together, as you might have done in high school, what socialized medicine is, for example. Medical and hospital services administered by an organized group and paid for by funds obtained, usually by assessments, taxation, or philanthropy. Well, I would say that's a loose definition of Obamacare. Now, if you read the classical definition of socialism in Merriam-Webster, it says a theory of social organization based on government ownership, management, or control of the means of production and the distribution and exchange of goods. So in classical 100% socialism, that is true. The government owns the businesses, as is going on in some of the South American banana republics, where they're seizing what was once private enterprise. That is classic gangster socialism of the type practiced today probably only in Cuba and North Korea, maybe a few other places that I'm not familiar with. That's gangster socialism of the type that has destroyed societies and people for well over 100 years. But if you look at China's socialism, what you find is something different. The government doesn't own, manage, and control production and distribution of goods. They have opened up the markets to free markets in China. What the government does is control the people through a centralized power structure. The people live in a prison camp, basically, in China. So they have more freedom in terms of their commerce than we do. I don't know if you know that. I know people who have gone and worked in China and own businesses there. They have the equivalent of a Wild West. They have what's called a free market economy in China. We don't. And then you could also argue, for example, that Obama's socialist government does, in fact, if it doesn't own the businesses that you run, it certainly manages and controls your means of production and your means of distribution and exchange of goods through the onerous regulations that the Lilliputians call bureaucrats impose upon us. But I don't want to get stuck on that. No, Obama's not really a socialist in that regard. He's worse than a European socialist today. Why? Because he runs a secretive, centralized government. European socialists today could never get away with his crimes against the American people. You see, in Europe, they are not hamstrung with white guilt. You see, in Europe, they're not hamstrung with a two-party system where there's no democracy whatsoever. You see, in Europe, many of the countries have parliamentary systems of government, which give the people numerous political parties to choose from, and, most importantly, an opportunity to dismiss a rogue, corrupt, incompetent regime. I will say no more. Let's take a call, because I think people are forgetting what I'm saying, don't know where I'm going. Shaman, in Memphis, on WKIM, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's your comment tonight?
Thank you for having me on your show. I listen to you in the evening because it's like a bedtime story. It's relaxing. When I settle in from the day, from running around, and I finally get to sit down, I sit down and listen to that rich voice. When I'm in my car, I listen to the yibber-yabber, and I like a lot of it. But I hope
there's a challenge in what you're saying, because when I go to the day part, am I going to be able to do the same comforting kind of show? Do I have to change the pace? Do I have to do more news? I don't know, maybe a little bit, but at the end of the day, it's going to be me doing my show. I think people have come who love my show will listen and come to expect the same type of show. A mixture of news, views, and reviews. You know what I'm saying, Charmin?
Yeah, and I hope they get a good voice, because I can't take a bunch of screechy voices in a row. And when I...
Oh, you mean to replace me? Look, I have a natural gift, as long as God wants me to have it. And that's up to God. I mean, he could turn the lights out at any minute on any of us, right? He could take what he's given me. He gave me the gift. He could take it away. You understand, Sherman? This is all a gift. It's all a miracle. It's all a dream. And I thank you for the call. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. So while you're calling 855-400-7282 on this beginning of Thanksgiving holiday. It really is. It's already, I don't know, the whole country's already gone into the holiday mood. They're in. They're shopping in the box store. Are they shopping yet? I hear the box stores are empty. No one's shopping yet. Here are some of the headlines. Michelle Obama forced to raise money saying, I hate doing this. Oh, really? It must be such a burden. Sort of cuts into your vacation time. John Strange McCain predicts Obamacare collapse, calls for GOP alternative. Oh, so he suddenly got the message that he's hated across America on both sides of the aisle. He thought by catering to the left-wing socialists, they'd love him and embrace him. Then he found that he had nobody because he stabbed his core in the back. No, John, you can't go home again, John. Next article head is the end question mark. Obamacare slams president like Katrina hit George Bush. I don't think he's through, by the way, at all. Report says 60% of child sex victims from foster homes. Let's see. Well, let's see. We're going down the list. This was on 11/18. Oh, today is 11/19. Secretary of Hate John Kerry calls climate change the world's biggest threat. Can you believe this lunatic? Does this guy have ketchup on his collar or what? Is this guy insane? The man is traveling around the world trying to stick a knife in Israel's heart, doing a deal with Iran, cutting off sanctions, making sure they build a bomb so they can kill the Jews, and now, on top of that, he comes up with the biggest lie of all time. Secretary of Hay, John Ketchup Kerry, told the climate change conference in Poland Monday that global warming is the biggest challenge to the world. Fulfilling our responsibility to the future happens. Oh, come on, John. No one believes a word you say. You've always been a fraud. New York Times. Politics makes D.C. the gayest place in America. I'm not interested in that topic. I don't care what people do sexually. How's that? It doesn't interest me. I'm about as interested in your alimentary canal as I am in your you know what? I just don't care what you do. How's that? Does that interest you? I don't care if you're gay or straight. It doesn't interest me. It's boring. It's that simple. What else is in the news? You know why I say that? I get angry because there's a movie that came out that I'm going to review tonight that I didn't see. I heard about it from two women I trust who like movies and went to the movies. They saw a movie called A Door. You'll throw up when you hear what it's about. You take Robin Penwright. Her name used to be Penn. She used to be married to that slimeball, Sean Penn, who talks the talk about liberalism and no guns and no violence. And every movie he's in, he's either kicking someone in the face, shooting them with a gun, or cutting their throat. In his last movie, Gangster Squad, it opens with him playing some Jewish gangster, Mickey Cohen, from the 50s, tearing a man apart with chains and two cars. The worst movie I've ever seen. So now he divorces at a runoff with some younger broad, apparently. And now she looks like you've never seen anything like this woman. She was once pretty. Her and Naomi Watts are in this movie called The Door. You know what it's about? It is about middle-aged women who sleep with their sons. Not their own sons, but the... In other words, woman A, Cougar A, and Cougar B. Cougar A sleeps with Cougar B's son, and Cougar B sleeps with Cougar A's son. This is how far Hollywood has fallen. It's about white trash behavior of the lowest kind. Adore. I'll talk more about it. It's the kind of trash that makes the world hate America. But what would you expect from Sean Penn's ex-wife?
Generations of people, older people, who were born and bred and marinated in it, in that prejudice and racism, and they just have to die.
Do you know what you're listening to? That's Oprah Winfrey saying that generations of whites from the South need to die. And she says it with a maliciousness that is not to be ignored. Now, I don't have to say, what if this were reversed? That's an obvious. We don't need to do that. What should happen as a result of this? I don't know. I have no idea, but I had to play this for you to see the level to which the psychos are going to support Obama. There's no other explanation for it. Why are they on the warpath all of a sudden? Whether it's Harvey Weinstein making stupid statements, Oprah Winfrey, or jerk from MSNBC. Why are they suddenly on the warpath? Why? Because they're, in plain English, their dream has crashed from Greek mythology of the young man who thought he could fly to the sun. Remember that? Does anyone remember the myth, that Greek myth? The young man is on a cliff and he wants to fly like a bird. And so he takes wood, and he takes bird feathers, and he takes wax, and he glues the feathers to the artificial wings with wax. And then he jumps off the cliff, and he starts to flap his wings, and he flies up and up and up and up, up and away. And he said, "Father, look, I can fly. I'm as free as a bird." The father warns him not to fly too close to the sun. The son ignores the father's warnings. Now, in this case, Obama has no father. How much of this can I take? If I say the O word one more time, and now there's two O words that I don't ever want to say. One is Obama, the other is Oprah. To me, they're in the same category. Two O words I never want to hear again. That's so I'm bashing MSNBC. I mean, why talk about Basher? Well, who is he? He's a nobody. A slimy, limey. I don't know what he's even doing in American media. You got to understand something. The British accent no longer sells. That was a Twiggy thing. In the 60s, I'll tell you how it started. I don't want to be taken the wrong way. A certain type of New York company, mainly guys from Brooklyn who sounded like Harvey Weinstein's father, I would imagine. Heavy, mixed accents from the old country who sold schmatas. Hired young girls who spoke with a British accent. Why? They thought it was classy. J&L ties, you know, that kind of thing. And every schnuck who made a little money hired a secretary with a British accent. So it was cool in the 60s. That whole British thing, everyone, like, they thought it intimidated their friends from who sold undershirts. So the tie manufacturer in the garment center would hire a girl who spoke with a British accent, and then she'd answer the phone, and the guy with the tie manufacturer then had to out get someone with a better British accent. So he hired someone from Jamaica because they have a better British accent than people from London, by the way, incidentally. This is a product of the great education people had in Jamaica. But today it doesn't sell. The reverse is true. No one trusts foreigners in America. So why would MSNBC hire someone with a fraudulent accent to begin with? If you investigate accents, and I'm an expert on them, you'll find there's no such thing as a British accent, per se. there are varieties of English spoken in England and in other, you know, ex-colonies that vary. But there's no such thing as class associated with it. I can go into that with American accents as well. Regional accents are interesting to me. My accent is interesting to me. Your accent is interesting to me. People who speak with a Midwestern no-accent voice are actually affecting that. They're affecting the fact that they have no regional accent. That's an affectation. But that's a separate zone. All right, 855-407-282. I'm getting cold here in the studio. So I asked a loaded question, I admit. It says Governor GOP hopefuls testing more inclusive tone. And I asked an interesting question. In California, of course, they're going to fall on their face. They think that the Republican Party has to engage candidates who are pro-homosexual marriage, pro-amnesty, and pro-abortion. They, of course, created new code words for all of that. Notice not one of those statements actually reads as it is. It says, should the Republicans engage social issues such as, quote, pro-choice, that means abortion, pro-same-sex marriage rights, that means homosexual marriage, and pro-pathway to citizenship for those in the U.S. illegally, that means amnesty. So just by setting the question up, they're lying. But that's what you get from Comrade Joe at the Chronicle. Comrade Joe can't write a straight sentence if he tried. That's how brainwashed the poor kid is. Probably a nice person. Probably going to go to a turkey dinner with a family somewhere that doesn't like him, I would imagine. You know, that's interesting to me is I look at all of the libs in the San Francisco area. Most of them who are like in the media come from the East Coast, and they come out and they affect being super liberal. Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm for all that stuff. Then they fly home to like Jersey or Cleveland for the holidays, and they go back to like conservative families. How do they behave when they get home? What are they, like I put on a conservative hat? Hey, how your crazy friends out there in San Francisco, huh? Enjoying it out there, huh? You nut you? How are you? It's already in the air, the turkey thing. There's no getting around it. The mind is already moving already to the turkey. I myself am distracted. It's next Thursday, right? So I'm going through a conflict. I have three conflicts every Thanksgiving. Should I cook at home or should I go to a restaurant for Thanksgiving? Should I invite other people outside the family or should I not invite them? Should I, you know, it's like I'm going through that already. On one hand, I want to stay home and cook because I like the smell of the turkey in the house. It permeates the curtains, makes it smell like a ghetto, which is, I kind of like it, like a slummy. It reminds me of like a slum apartment. Not a dirty, don't confuse a slum apartment with something dirty. Our apartment was immaculate, but it was in a slum when I was a kid. But when I grew up, I always liked the whole thing. The little house in Queens where the brick house attached. It reminded me very much of a house out of Dickens, England, you know, the attached homes in Queens, New York. Starter homes. Father paid $14,500 for it in the early 50s. It was fine for us. Three bedrooms, one bathroom, horrible. Oh, man. That part I didn't like. I don't want to go into it. I'm not Martin Basher. But the thing is, you got, you know, two, three children and a set of adults in one bathroom. You don't want to know about that. How did people live like this? Like from another world. They had one little bathroom downstairs, like it was called the guest bathroom. You couldn't get in that thing. You couldn't move in. It was, and the dining room, I've said this before, dining room, but it was my mother would put out a spread for Thanksgiving. I remember to this day how great it was. She'd cook all day with the ants over. It was beautiful. A little four-burner stove with electric. How did she do it? There was no, she was afraid of gas, I think. She had certain phobias, God rest. I don't want to divulge. She was afraid of gas, so they had electric, but she could turn out better than the kitchen. Now everyone has Gaggenau in Tiburon, California. Oh, yeah, there were $12,000 stoves that no one has ever turned on. Six of those refrigerators in the house, six. You open one, it's got cold drinks in it. The main one for the house, oh, subs. Everyone has a Sub-Zero, right? They have Sub-Zero, you open it up, it looks like a prostitute's refrigerator. It's got a bottle of water in it and a bottle of cold wine, nothing to eat. And then the stove, 12 burners, cook special things you touch, contraptions that can rotisserie. No one's ever turned it on. My mother had an electric stove with four grids on it. She could make six restaurant meals at one time. And if you open the refrigerator, there were meals ready to be reheated. She had no microwave in the house. That was a later addition. She thought it was no good. It would ruin the food. She'd heat on the stove the old way. So, you know, Thanksgiving always has those memories for me. She had appetizers. Now, I'll tell you why. You came in her house for Thanksgiving dinner or any other dinner. All over the living room, spread on every table, was something to dip into. A chopped chicken liver, or this, a fish, or that, a cracker, a drink. Because she didn't want to, like, think that people were waiting. Now, I once went to a wedding out here in Marin County years ago. Nice people. No negatives intended. It was so high class that there was no food served for 2 hours. I've never seen anything like it. There was not a nut. Nothing. There were only alcoholic drinks. Nobody could believe this. They were fainting. You had to wear a certain kind of outfit and a suit and special candles from Sweden. It was up in Sonoma. A gorgeous wedding. Beautiful people. Everyone was well-dressed, turned out well, beautiful cars outside. Not a drop to eat for 2 hours. It was so bad, people were getting back in their cars and going down the highway to, like, a pizza place. They were going getting a pizza off the highway before the wedding. My mother knew this. If you go to a party, you got to feed them. So there was always food there. Are you interested in this or not? Want me to do politics? You're ready on to the turkey and how to make it crisp. I don't want to do that yet. It's a little too early for that. I could give you the politics. But what's the point? What am I going to say to you that you haven't heard? Let's take some calls. These great calls. I mean, the whole thing about slavery and kill the white people. How does she get away with it? By the way, I was never an Oprah Winfrey fan. I thought she was a fraud from the get-go, a product of a warped society. I have no idea how she got such ratings. I pretty much know how, okay? I can't say it, though. They'll accuse me of something I'm not. You know, you want to talk about African-Americans. There's a show that I didn't like. Now I like it a lot. And it's Homeland I didn't watch last night because I was distracted. I had to go to dinner with a wonderful person. The show I like is Boardwalk Empire. I didn't like it originally because Stephen Buscemi looked too weak for the gangster role. But he's grown into the role. I didn't like the opening with the shoes in the water. I didn't get that. What was he standing in the water with his wingtip shoes with Atlantic City water coming on his shoes? Didn't like it. But as it's developed, my favorite character in Boardwalk Empire is the African-American character, Mr. White. He's amazing. He's my new favorite actor, actually, of all time. So he's a black guy who works his way up from the gutter, and he winds up running a really ritzy club in Atlantic City. He's got everything. He's got the club. He's got the beautiful family. Everything's rolling for him. Now, things turn bad when the Stephen Buscemi character turns on him. And he gets into a gunfight because the other black guy has turned on him and he tries to kill him. One of the best fight scenes ever done was between those two guys. So he runs away now. He's in hiding. He's on the lam, the Mr. White character. He gets shot in the arm and he runs. So now he flees. Buscemi sends the police from Atlantic City to get him out of town. Little does he know he's going to his death. The cops are corrupted. They're going to take him and shoot him on the side of the road. So he smells a rat. He's in the car with his girlfriend. He left his wife and family to get away. And he says, I just doze off for a while. Meanwhile, he knows what they're planning, these two cops. Well, in the ensuing melee, he kills both of them, and he runs away with the police car, and he's on the run now. So in this scene last night, I got to tell you why I'm telling you this. The Mr. White character, you don't even have to have HBO to dig this, because I'm such a good storyteller. I can retell that story, and it's exciting. It's as good as Mark Twain. He goes to some house in a dilapidated part of the country, inhabited by a group of African-American fellows from the old country guys. This is not city slicker type, country guys. And here's what I'm getting at. The stage set is one of the best ever done for television. It's of a dilapidated southern plantation. Paint is falling down. The Doric, the pseudo-Doric columns are on the front. Unbelievable. So these guys are living there, and he comes in with the girlfriend. Now they start to speak to each other in a southern black dialect that has never, ever been done as well in my life. I've never heard anything as well done. I'm an expert on dialect. I'm an expert on voice. So when the Mr. White character in Boardwalk Empire is speaking with these other guys, you literally, as a white person, not from the South, would almost need a subscript to understand it. I would venture a guess that most African Americans who are middle class and educated wouldn't understand most of the dialogue. It's so well done. But I got so used to listening to them, I so appreciated what they were doing, that I thought for a while I was watching something come to life from Mark Twain. It was as good as Mark Twain's dialogue. Do you understand what I'm saying, how well this was? It's unbelievable for television. Anyway, I'm trying to tell you there's great television out there, and I really enjoy it. I'm not trying to prove anything. And I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Between the rhetoric and the tactics versus the ideological differences. I mean, in most countries, you've got, you know, people call me a socialist sometimes, but no, you got to meet real socialists. you'll have a sense of what a socialist is.
Yeah, well, okay. Why would you giggle at a thing like that? It's always been true that dictatorships emerge this way, and they let the big businesses have what they want. They let the power brokers have what they want, and they strangle the people. They stifle the middle class. That's how socialism grows. That's how the cancer grows. I mean, you define socialism any way you want. It's centralized, secretive government. In this case, it's centralized, secretive, corrupt, and incompetent government. So, and as I said before, he's worse than a Euro-socialist. They could never get away with what Obama's getting away with. In Europe, they're not hamstrung with white guilt. And the parliamentary systems that occur in most European countries give the people an opportunity to dismiss a rogue, corrupt, or incompetent regime. We don't have such a leisure here. We got to wait, you know? It's the Savage Nation. And the lines are so hot, it's amazing. What, radio is the most amazing medium on earth. Unless you're in radio and as connected to it as I am, you can't understand what I'm saying to you. Maybe as an audience member you can. There is nothing more electrifying than talk radio. Nothing. I heard this when I first started. Somebody told me 20 years ago that radio is considered the bastard child of the entertainment medium, and it's still known as that. But that's how it's looked upon by the power brokers or the people who make the money off it. It's sneered at. But from the performer's point of view, talk radio is the most electrifying of all mediums. You ask anybody. You ask anybody, anyone who does this. First of all, it's unscripted. So you're walking without on a tightrope. I have no script in front of me. Yeah, I have sound bites and stories. But I don't know where exactly the form I'm going to go in or how I'm going to play it out. Because I don't know what you want. I have to feel it. I have to feel my way through it. Someone said to me, well, it's like you're stepping into a ring and you don't know if you're going to win the fight. I said, no, I know I'm going to win the fight, but I don't know what strategy I'm going to use until I see my opponent. In this case, the opponent is the ether itself. It's a fantastic thing I'm saying to you. You are the ether. My audience is this etherous mass of listeners. I'm in a room alone somewhere. I don't know who you are, but I can sense you. I can sense you as though I have a sixth sense about my audience. If you don't have it, you can't do this business. So I'm asking you as my audience, I mean, on a Tuesday night like this, you are listening because you love the show and you want to hear a little bit of the news, but not all news, blah, blah, blah. And I'm saying to you, come January 2nd, 3rd, what would you do if you were my producer differently than what I am doing? If anything, I'm not sure I'm going to do anything differently, nor do I think I could do anything differently because I'm not a script guy. So, Joan, you're my producer for a night on WABC. Go ahead. Be my producer. What would you recommend?
You have to look at it this way. You're coming back home to your roots, back to New York. When you talk about things that happened to you in your childhood, it's funny and it's comforting, and there's millions of baby boomers that can relate to the experiences that you talk about. And it's so entertaining. I loved hearing about your mother cooking. You made me laugh. Sometimes you make me want to cry. I'm so happy you're coming back home. You can
That's beautiful. No, that's a very beautiful statement. It's absolutely 1,000% true. In other words, my show is national. I've lived in San Francisco, remember, since 1974. You know how long that is already? Do the math. I mean, I don't even want to do the math. It depresses me to do the math. But I've been here since 1974, off and on. But, you know, I never really left New York. I don't go there that often. Once my mother passed away, I never really went back. My publishers are in New York. In fact, my new publisher, God bless her, came out to see me. I had dinner with her Sunday night. I saw her for lunch yesterday. She's as Manhattan as they come. And actually, I have a bigger New York accent than she does. I said to her, how come you don't have a New York accent if you're born in Manhattan? She said, I don't know. It's bizarre. That was an interesting thing. That's an interesting thing. Do Manhattanites still have an accident? An accident or not?
I'm telling you, it sounds like you live right next door. I mean, don't lose it. It's precious.
No, I can't. I had the opportunity to hide myself in that way years ago. When I started in radio, they said, oh, he's too New York. He'll never make it. Well, I guess they were wrong. But the thing is, whatever. I mean, what's the point of hiding your accent? What are you going to get out of it? Nope. What do I want to sound like? I almost use the word. I can't. It's a bad word in Italian. I'll say a schnook. That's not the word. It begins with a S, but it doesn't end with that. I don't want to sound like a schnook from Nowhereville. Thanks for the call. So she's saying don't change. Now KSFO Brad says do change. Brad, go ahead. You're up. You're my producer for a day. What would you recommend?
Well, Michael, first of all, I wanted to say that I'm a longtime listener. You are an American hero, my friend, so I would not change a whole lot. We need to hear the versatile Michael, and you need to bring that out in the first 2 weeks. And how?
I agree. Well, first of all, you're 1,000% right. First of all, I would never stick just to politics because, look, Brad, I got to say this in a nice way. I do tune into other shows a minute here, a minute there. I don't understand it because I can predict what I'm going to hear. I don't care what time of day I turn it on. I know that within, I'd say, 5 to 10 words, I'm going to hear the word Obamacare or the Founding Fathers. I know I'm going to hear it. I don't want to hear it anymore.
Savage.